Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. Iran has retaliated. Is the U.S. getting ready for a wider war? And how many wars is the Biden administration planning on fighting? How many can it win? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out, as usual, with George in Budapest. Well, George, you and I have talked about it so much on this program and on our podcast as well. We, like everyone else, was waiting for Iran to react to the April 1st bombing of its consulate in Damascus. Well, it has happened. It's about 331 different types of projectiles. Israel claims they've destroyed almost all of them, minor damage, but that's their version of the story. Iran says it was an overwhelming success. We wouldn't have expected differently from both parties. What does this all mean? Because really what it gets down to is that all the discussion now is not about the genocide, but will Israel react in kind or escalate? Your thoughts, George.
Well, you're absolutely right that is now the discussion, because the United States, and this is, I think, a surprise of all of this, the United States, the United Kingdom, France joined Israel in fighting off this drone and missile attack. That's a very explicit commitment.
Yes,
and that is a surprise. Now, having made this commitment, it seems as if the United States, so far as we can believe the media reports, the United States is now pressing Israel not to retaliate in kind, not to be provoked into launching an attack against Iran. Well, that's a hopeless endeavor. Israel isn't just going to say, well, all right, well, enough is enough, we'll call it a day. Which is Iran, that's Iran's position, which is, well, we regard this affair as now over. But Israel is clearly saying, no, this is not over. This is just the beginning. So at this stage, I mean, while the United States has said, well, we don't want Netanyahu to do this, and if Netanyahu does attack Iran, we will not join him. Well, that's not really, within the American jurisdiction, because, of course, if Israel does attack Iran, then, all bets are off. I mean, it's like, United States isn't going to be able to say, well, we didn't have anything to do with it, because you've already made this commitment. You already helped Israel in what was, after all, a retaliatory strike. I mean, Israel started the whole thing. Iran retaliated. The United States, Britain, and France joined Israel in fighting off this retaliation. Well, you are now parties to the conflict.
Exactly. Ironclad commitment during, and now it's going to be ironclad commitment afterwards. Martin, it's very interesting if you look at the reaction in Western capitals. There was no condemnation, even at the United Nations Security Council, of what Israel did in bombing the Iranian consulate in Damascus, but now they're coming out in lockstep saying this is out of self-defense. But it's really quite whimsical, isn't it? Is that Iran did its action in self-defense against an action taken against it? The half the story is not reported.
Yeah, sadly, and that's very, very typical for Western media, British media certainly, is that we haven't got the nuance there. We haven't got the correct perspective. So journalists are just writing the narrative, which is really what, they're doing simply to please their masters and the intel services and the government and the state. In Germany, just in the last few days, a conference supposedly hosted by Yanis Varoufakis, former Greek finance minister, was cancelled by the German police. Just shut it down completely. You will not have debate. You will not talk.
Well, Martin, it's really interesting. It was pointed out to me that if that conference had occurred, we never would have heard about it. But because it was shut down, we've all heard about it. This is the getting negative returns. Keep going.
Yeah, it's stupid. I mean, the classic way of promoting a book is get it banned, and it's the same with media. So now they've got more, And the Palestinian academic from Glasgow couldn't actually fly in and give his speech. He was threatened also with even putting it online. So, I mean, this gives you an idea of just how fascist we become. We are now fascist societies. They're the very thing that we claimed to have fought in the Second World War now is devouring all of us. And this is partly, why you have a situation now whereby Iran can do what it did over the weekend and it doesn't get reported accurately. And it gets reported in a certain way, which presumably will provoke the Israelis, as George said, to take it to the next level. What's interesting, what's really interesting about what happened over the weekend was that it was very measured, it was very precise, and I think it was very smart of the Iranians to do exactly that. They sent over 300 drones. They knew most of those drones would be intercepted. They knew there'd be minimal casualties. But it busted a lot of myths, a lot of myths. The main one
Well,
was.
we haven't said it yet, but it was the first time Iran,
Yeah.
attacked Israel
And
directly.
even you didn't think that was possible. You said on the last show that probably you thought the proxies would get involved, but actually Iran did it themselves. So that's something for the Israelis to really think about. That okay, next time we decide to hit Iranians in Syria, we know what to expect. Or perhaps worse, perhaps it would be not 300 drones, but 600. But look, the point is that they wouldn't have been able to defend themselves if it wasn't for the Americans, the British, and even the Jordanians. Another myth busted. Jordan's King Abdullah opened up the airspace for Israeli jets and British RAF jets to intercept these drones. So there were a lot of lessons learned. And I think if Iran wanted to deliver a message very clearly, it really succeeded. I think it was a more a victory for Iran and less for Israel, because Israel isn't going to learn the lessons. Israel is going to look at now how it can retaliate. And that will be the breaking point of the West. You say the cast iron agreements are there. I think Biden's made it very clear that he won't go further. If Israel goes further, now where would Israel hit Iran? Not in Iran.
What is to stop the Israelis? They're getting a green light here. George, it's interesting. We have some interesting symmetry here. You said in your answer, and so did Martin. The headline story is that Iran attacked Israel in response. Well, at least on this program, response to the attack on its embassy. But you had missiles coming in from Iraq, Lebanon, and Yemen. And you've already mentioned how the UK and France and others have helped Israel. We're getting symmetry here. This is something we all have talked about for weeks and weeks now, is that the axis of resistance is real. Go ahead, George.
Well, it certainly is real. But the question is then, where do you take this? How far do you want to take this? Because when you're dealing with Israel, you're dealing with a power that isn't restrained by the normal constraints that bind other powers. So when apparently, I mean, again, we're only going by media reports, apparently. Biden has earned, has told Netanyahu, "Hey, you won, take the win, don't take it any further." Well, let's say he did say this. That doesn't bind Netanyahu in any way at all. And we know, and there's a long history of this, that Israel has wanted to embroil the United States in a war with Iran for many, many years. I mean, this has been an ongoing thing, which is
Particularly this prime minister of Israel.
exactly. And Netanyahu, in the past, it was always, "Oh, we're going to hit Iran's nuclear facilities. We're going to hit Iran's nuclear facilities," knowing that if Iran retaliates, then somehow the United States gets sucked into the war. Well, chances are that's what's going to happen now. Israel will hit Iran's nuclear facilities. Iran will doubtless retaliate. It's going to be hard for the United States to stay out of this war. No doubt Biden and Blinken will say, no, we don't want any escalation. We're not going to get involved. We're not a party to the conflict." It's going to be quite hard. Once you've made this initial commitment, it's going to be hard to stay out.
George Martin, the first question I wrote down for this program in my notes, and I'll pitch it to Martin right now. Because the last program, you said I always give the good questions to George. Well, I'll give a good one to you now. Okay. Who's controlling the narrative, Martin?
Yeah, that is a very good question. Is it the dog wagging the tail, or the tail is wagging the dog? I think in the next 24 hours or 48 hours, we'll see whether
Probably.
Biden is able to actually show how important America is and how much Israel needs America and Britain and a few other key allies on its side. But I don't agree with George. I don't think the Israelis are that stupid. I don't think they would go that far to hit nuclear installations inside Iran. I think that would
Well, they've assassinated their scientists. I mean,
yeah,
six
they
of
do
them.
That. They
one,
do
one
hit.
Survived. Yeah. I mean,
they do.
I don't see how they're. I think
let
the
me
message
finish.
Is it's unlimited now, not limited, unlimited. Go ahead.
Let me make my point. I think where they will hit, where they, if they do want to escalate it further and make their point, what I think they'll do is they'll go for Iranian soldiers in Syria, of which there are many. You know, the last 2 or 3 years, a lot of Iranian military installations have been built, which isn't reported so much. And Iranian militias as well in Syria and Iraq. I think that will be, and it will be airstrikes, and, you know, they'll want to make their point that way. Now, at that point, when we get to that point, then we have a real tipping point, because then London and Washington will have to decide, you know, we need some common sense here. You know, is Biden really going to start an election campaign with a third war, you know, opening up? I mean, it just seems nuts. You know, we've never been this far. We've never, this is new ground for the Americas. No American president has ever really wanted to take on Iran in a war. And if we're edging towards that, you know, this, it would seem suicide for the Biden administration and for the West in general. You know, I mean, the other thing which I wanted to make a point about is that there must be people in the military in Israel or close to Netanyahu, which are telling him about the practicalities of having a third front. You know, can we really take on Iran when we've got Gaza at this boiling point and we're about to go in to Rafah? You know, if we took the escalation to the next level and started looking at Iran as an enemy, that would mean Hezbollah would start hitting us on our northern border as well. And the big fear that a lot of analysts have been talking about for months now is that Hezbollah this time, as opposed to 2006, this time will go in for a land invasion of a northern strip on Israel. That's part of their defense. That's part of their strategy, which is probably the worst kept secret in the Middle East.
Yeah, so, but always at the end of the day is that they have their high card. It's called the United States. And given the rhetoric coming out of the United States, they have not put themselves into a position where they cannot say no to Israel. They can't say no to a genocide. They won't say no to a war. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. And we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. George, let me go to you. One of the first things that came out of the Biden administration, which I think for most people, Western audiences, they wouldn't pick up on it, but I certainly did. Biden wants to contact his G7 counterparts. Again, this is the post-colonial masters making decisions about the middle. It's like Sykes-Picot all over again here. Yeah. I'm sure they're not aware of it. They have no sense of irony about their how they see the world, but the world sees them in a very specific way. These old colonial powers are going to come in and intervene again. It's amazing, George.
That's a very good point, because the G7 is a very narrow group of countries. I think pretty much all of them are members of NATO. I think six of them, with the exception of Japan. Okay. Japan is essentially kind of a satellite state of the United States, at least as far as foreign policy is concerned. And it's, you know, very interesting that Biden's initial response is, oh, well, we're going to go to the G7. So in other words, all of our allies, and that somehow this helps in any way, because after all, you're dealing with countries that are not allies of the United States, and they are aligned with other countries that are also not allies of the United States. So it's a very narrow focus. And, you know, obviously the normal place you would go is, well, we'll have a meeting at the UN Security Council. But that wasn't the United States' initial response. And in fact, they're going to ignore the UN Security Council, other than make the usual condemnations of Iran and suggest that Iran was acting as the aggressor, which is what the Americans have been saying, which Annalena Baerbock was saying, what Rishi Sunak was saying. And no doubt they're going to spout this thing at the UN Security Council meeting. But what is really interesting here is that by doing this, essentially the United States is escalating things.
That's right.
I mean, that's it, precisely if you go to this narrow group, this narrow bunch of states that are closely aligned with the United States, that always support US foreign policy, that never criticize US foreign policy, you are essentially escalating because you're essentially saying that, hey, we are all with Israel, we are all committed to Israel, and whatever happens next, we have Israel's backs. Well, that's an escalation.
Well, Martin, you already brought it up here, but in an election year, Joe Biden, who is not doing very well in the polls, as I always say to our audience here, is that maybe summertime I'll start looking at some of the polls more seriously. But you have under Biden's watch, you have the catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan. Those images from Kabul are still with us here. We have the proxy war in Ukraine, a war that never should have happened in the first place. Obviously, the genocide going on in Gaza. They're stationing troops in Taiwan. Of course, Iran is the perennial enemy here. And Hezbollah, they got in on the act over the weekend as well. How many wars can Biden give attention to? Okay. And as I said in my introduction, how many can he win?
Well,
Go
yeah,
ahead, Martin.
how many can you mess up? I mean,
Okay, there you go. Better. You phrased it better than I did. Yes.
if you just rattle off the list even before him, going back to the Second World War, I mean, there are just dozens of examples where America, with its Western partners, often Britain, have just plowed into countries and just got involved in internal conflict and messed up and left just a trail of havoc, calamity behind them, And just more recently, you mentioned Ukraine, and now Gaza, and I think the American public, when they look at, if they remember Biden's administration, when they look back at it and they reflect on it, and some of the more non-left-leaning media do these kind of video montage in the last few weeks' elections of Biden's foreign policy footprint, and you have that classic iconic, footage of thousands of people running along the airstrip at Kabul Airport with that C 130 jet, I think it was. These images, people will start to, they can't understand foreign policy, the average blue collar worker in America, but they can understand, how constantly there is this repetitive theme whereby the military industrial complex makes a huge amount of money. Our politicians seem to be very happy and we're all driving around in new cars and buying Learjets. And yet, food at the supermarket is getting more expensive. Gas pump prices are going up. More Americans are losing their homes. People will start to understand that militarized foreign policy is just basically a disaster zone for the country and for the
Well,
economy.
I have to push back on that a little bit, George, because we're all veterans of how this propaganda machine works. I mean, well, prices are up because Iran, okay? Because Iran is about threatening Israel, okay? It's Hamas's fault, okay? They never take responsibility for their own actions. It's always, oh, of course, and of course, Russia's always at fault for whatever you want, climate change, maybe even. So, but the, you know. I think really to the point here, George, is that with all of the conflicts that I mentioned and what Martin had to say here, is the United States vulnerable? And is the West vulnerable? Because there seems to be some kind of tipping point going on here now, is that there's a swarming effect. They're trying to get the I mean, you got to feel probably bad for the Zelensky crowd because everybody's going to forget about them because the first order of business in Congress, you know what it's going to be on Monday morning, George, support for Israel. Go ahead.
Well, that's right, and I also have to say that it's easy to say, oh yeah, it's a, go back to 1945. It's all U.S. incompetent U.S. foreign policy. But there have been eras since 1945 in which the U.S. exuded competence. The U.S. Achieved foreign policy goals. I mean, vast complex treaties were signed with by the United States. A vast network of agreements signed by the United States. I mean,
The Helsinki
the
process.
Helsinki Pact, and of course, we talked about the Nixon era, and we talked about these, again, one major agreement after another, and these were foreign policy accomplishments. Now, something has gone wrong in recent decades. One could say, hey, the influence of the neocons, but because what we have now Is the United States kind of reacting from one crisis to another, getting itself involved in one crisis after another without any overarching vision of what it's trying to achieve? Because it's somehow, well, you know, we have to support Zelensky, we have to support Ukraine, we have to have Israel's back. But at no point does the United States think, well, what is the United States goal? What is the United States trying to achieve? How does the United States envisage the world in the next 10, 15 years? And that's at least what you had back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, when at least you had, presidents who were thinking in those terms. So I think there's been a drastic decline in U.S. Foreign policy leadership, and the apotheosis of all of this is Biden. Biden was, hopelessly incompetent. His head filled with some ideological platitudes that he never really understood, going back to the 1980s. And I think now, as you list all these things, you know, we had the Biden meeting with the Japanese prime minister and with the Philippines prime minister. That's directed at China. We got the Zelensky thing ongoing, still demanding that more and more be sent to Ukraine. And now we've got this. So it's a vast complex of issues, and the United States has no idea what to do other than go continue down this path.
Well, it's certainly not to entertain ideas of diplomacy, as George rightly pointed out. Okay, the great struggle, as we all three were coming up, was the Cold War, and it was managed. Okay, it was managed. We avoided war, but Martin, I'm very cynical about this. Of course, I've looked at the major headlines before we started here. It's just very pro-Israel. What else would you expect from Western media? But it seems to me it's more of a cover. I think that very little coverage, and almost none in Western media, is what's going on in the West Bank. It is horrific what is going on right there. Yeah. The destruction of the land and people of Gaza continues unabated, but we're not talking about it, okay? And I think this is all very intentional. It was Israel that started the provocation by attacking the consulate in Damascus, and that's exactly why I asked you that question. Who is controlling the narrative? I think they are. Go ahead, Martin.
We've taken our eyes off the ball. And I think
the settlers
in the West Bank are taking advantage of this window to doing whatever horrific, ghastly acts they think they're justified in doing. And of course, it's not getting reported. The other thing that's not getting reported about West Bank is that it's becoming completely lawless. The Israeli authorities there now are just losing control completely with their crackdowns, with their daily assassinations, their kidnappings, illegal arrests. You know, it's off the scale now. But what's also off the scale, and which is also not being reported, is the number of Iranian arms which are being pumped into the West Bank. So this is something else which is bubbling in the background. You have now, an insurgency in the making. Iran is using its influence in the region to use Jordan to ship by road a lot of illegal arms, small arms. So that's another cauldron that we will expect to start bubbling up, in the future. But I think we're looking at a catastrophe now on a level that we've never really been able to understand. To go back to George's point, the Americans made a lot of headway in the 60s, 70s, and perhaps 80s, when they were a superpower, when they were the sole superpower. And when you're a superpower of that size and that dimension, you can make mistakes because everybody forgives you. Everybody says, gee, that's America. You can pull out of Vietnam and everyone says, yeah, okay, so what? America's big enough to carry on with its bellicose, careless.
I think George, that really where the mishaps have occurred, and like you got like 40 seconds here, is that they abuse the unipolar moment, and that moment is closed. Go ahead, George.
I think so, and I think that back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, there was a rival, which was at least a military rival, which was the Soviet Union, and the United States respected that, and the United States felt, hey, we kind of share the planet with them. We cannot get into a dangerous escalation with them. This, since the unipolar moment, The United States says, we won the Cold War, we deserve the winnings, and we're going to take the winnings home with us. And even though, all the evidence is suggesting
it will take the winnings, and this is how they use their victory, a Pyrrhic victory, I would say. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest, and of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.